The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air, talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's the cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. Yes, it does.
Every day.
It totally settles in your soul.
You betcha.
Can you turn my mic up a little bit there, Wynn?
What color are you?
Yeah, I can barely hear you, buddy.
There?
That's better.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
All right, there we go.
We're broadcasting live here on Jefferson State of Mind. This is Terry Raposa and Wynn Carpenter. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well.
We're here with our producer, Liam. How are you, Liam?
I'm doing great.
Broadcasting live on 96.5 FM. Where the music sounds better, 1460 AM. And we're streaming live on KCNR1460.com. And we are archived forever.
And ever.
And ever.
And ever.
And we're here with another co-host, which is Mark Baird. How you doing, Mark?
Every day is a blessing. How are you guys?
Doing good. Like your hat, man.
I do, too. I need a shirt to match.
It's got the old FJB. What does that stand for?
it stands for Let's Go Brandon.
Let's go Brandon. Let's go Brandon.
Good. We've got a couple of things quick before we get into some very, very important discussion and news on Mark's Second Amendment case. But first of all, we want to do something we've started as a tradition. When we go to the Board of Supervisor meetings, there's always 10 minutes or 15 minutes of accolades and yogurts and, you know, free hamburgers given to the employees of our great Shasta County, not saying that they don't do a good job, but they get paid very well. They also get a very, very good retirement. And, you know, they get accolades for just doing their job, which is good. I mean, okay, but what about the citizens, the people who actually pay to have those people do their jobs, and what about them? So we've decided to do private citizens, and we'd like to honor Jackie Jones today. She's a wonderful lady, works at Jones Fort. If you go in there, her demeanor is always pleasant. She's just fantastic. She helped my wife a lot with the firearm she bought. She makes you feel relaxed and comfortable, kind of unlike Patrick, right? Just kidding, Patrick.
She's a good balance.
Patrick's.
No.
By the way, if you don't know Patrick Jones very well, he's probably one of the funniest people I know. I mean, he is
dry.
He is hilarious.
Yep.
Jackie is just someone who will go the extra mile to help the customer, and she also does this hobby she has, which is painting on rocks, which are beautiful. She's done a couple for my wife. We have them out in our front yard. They're just beautiful. But it's nice to see when you go into some place and you have questions, especially, you know, ladies or even people that have never bought a firearm before. Jackie gives you that feeling of, you know, that you're relaxed. You don't feel any questions, you know, too dumb to ask her. Just really a wonderful lady, and we really appreciate you, Jackie. So you are Citizen of the Week.
Hats off.
Now, saying that, let's talk about Kathy Darling Allen. Did you guys all get flyers from Kathy Darling Allen? Some people got two, and Wynn's got a little story on that.
A little story? I've got two. One for myself and one for my wife. And I know my daughter and my mother-in-law, who also live with us, are registered voters. I'm wondering where theirs are. Maybe they have different stories, because these are two different flyers saying different information. One is like a resume of how good and wonderful she is, and the other one is something else. So I'm not sure what to expect. I've seen them posted out there on social media in the last day or so, and we're wondering, how much did it really cost to send this to all the registered voters in Shasta County, because if that's the case, these went to all the voters of Shasta County. That was a boatload of money, number one. And then number two, it's right on the heels of her office, and she has the ultimate responsibility, of making a mistake in Shasta Lake City where they screwed up the ballot up there and left things off, didn't even acknowledge it, didn't even do it. And then she turns around and goes to their city council meeting and tells them that, you know, they would gladly pay half of the cost.
What?
Or the expectation of Shasta
Lake. You mean
Lake.
We will, as taxpayers, pay
yeah,
half the cost.
Yeah, her office. But then also Shasta Lake City would be expected to pay half of the cost. So half of the cost of what? And then we're thinking it was $80,000 is what she was talking about. It's like, are you kidding? So that's just for one small election in one small part of the county? Well, then, if that's the case, then how much is this costing us to go countywide on top of all that? So I think there's, I'm going to be blunt, piss-poor management in that office, watching their numbers. The best way to affect any political office is by the purse strings, and I think the Board of Supervisors needs to get a handle on that immediately and pull it back every which way they can on that office, because she has been going rogue. Dare I say it? Yeah, rogue, by doing this crap. So what does this flyer offer any information to the voting citizen about? What information does she give on here that people don't already know, that can't already access the information? Why would she even spend the money doing this? Makes absolutely no sense.
Justify a position, you know, the one that has her little picture on it, that flyer, one of the two.
And that's an old picture.
It is an old picture. Yeah, she looks a little thinner.
She looks a little darker haired there,
she
too.
She does, yeah. In the United States, elections are administered at the local level. This is what she's saying. And then she says, we are just one of thousands of offices throughout the county that work tirelessly to ensure the cornerstone of our democracy. Well, first of all, we're not a democracy.
We're a republic.
We're a republic.
Even in Connie, California, we're still a republic.
Even California is administered in a transparent, efficient, and accurate manner. Why does she have to tell us that? Why does she have to spend $30,000 to tell us that? As your local elected registrar of voters, okay, I am responsible for administering our local elections by following both state and federal laws. Since 2004, I've overseen 37 elections and counted more than 1.5 million votes. I do not do this work alone. For an election to be successful, I need to have the support of both full-time and part-time staff members and hundreds of volunteers. What's the point of this thing, other than costing us taxpayer money? I mean, why does she have to justify her position? I've never seen one of these before. You know, and I think that at the Board of Supervisors meeting, they need to question this. You know, they're spending all this money on two flyers, not just one, but two flyers, and one to build up Kathy Darling Allens, who says she's an elected official. We don't know if that's really true or not, but we there are people who have their reservations about that. And, you know, in looking at this thing, why was it even sent out? Why are you spending taxpayer money? And at what particular point in time do we say enough is enough? What's going on with all these rogue, well, did she appoint herself, do you think? just a question.
It's worth asking. And it's also getting, it's worth getting to the bottom of. And that's why we need to do a forensic audit on this department like we would do any other department. And it needs to happen as soon as possible.
I think so, too. So with that, we'd like to go to our guest, Mark Baird, and actually co-host. He's on for all 3 hours today. He'll be on Sovereign Minds also. There's a very, very, very important court case that's going on that'll be happening at the Robert Matsui Courthouse, Federal Courthouse, in Sacramento at 501 I Street on November the 4th at 9 a.m. So, Mark, take it away, buddy. Give us a little background on that, and what do you think we can expect when we get there?
Well, this is a hearing on the motion for a preliminary injunction to bar the state of California from the state of California and its officers and agents, meaning sheriffs, police chiefs, so on and so forth, to enforce Penal Code Section 25850 and 26400. or 26.350, I'm sorry. And those are the ban on the open carry of a loaded weapon outside your home and the open carry of an unloaded weapon outside your home. 26.400 is a ban on the open carry of a long gun outside your home. We did not attack that because I had a lot of trouble finding an attorney, and it's very, very expensive, and so we were forced by circumstances to keep the object of the suit narrow. What we hope to do with this lawsuit is restore the pre-governmental, pre-constitutional, God-given right to self-defense of yourself, your family, your community, your state, and your nation. And that is codified in the Second Amendment. It is not bestowed upon us by government, nor are we bound to seek government permission to exercise a liberty given us by our God before this government was even formed. And so we want to restore that in California, and it was stripped from us in 1967 by the Mulford Act, which was an attempt to prevent urban blacks from arming themselves to stop police brutality in Oakland, California. And so after a demonstration in the Capitol with their weapons, which was perfectly lawful at the time, and I have my own opinion of the Black Panthers, and I'm sure you do too if you even know what they are, if you're old enough to know what they are. But the point is, the demonstration they made in the Capitol building was lawful. No one was hurt. No one was harmed. No one was threatened. No one was shot. Nothing happened. When the police asked them to leave, they left, as was as they were bound to do. And yet the legislature was fearful enough of the people that that champion of liberty, Don Mulford, who was the Republican assemblyman from Oakland, California, and Ronald Reagan, that champion of liberty, also with the help of the National Rifle Association, crafted a law called the Mulford Act in order to keep the people from demonstrating in the people's house. They stripped all Californians of their right to openly carry a loaded weapon, which had been the law of the land since before California was a state and before Mexico had control of California and during Spanish rule and probably and before that when there was no government here. There have been no restrictions on the open carry of loaded weapons, none whatsoever until 1968 when our precious government stripped us of our God-given liberty, and we're going to regain that liberty without government permission.
How did they justify doing that? In the law, how did they justify doing that?
Well, Ronald Reagan said, no citizen needs a gun.
No citizen needs a gun.
No citizen needs to carry a gun. That's what he said. Huh. And then in 2012, when little Anthony Portantino, the illustrious senator from, I think, Pasadena or Glendale, California, by the way, who was catapulted to political fame because he was the art director on the Grizzly Adams TV show.
Oh, so he's the art director of Grizzly Adams, so that made him famous to be a politician.
That's correct. And he declared in 2012 to his Democratic buddies in the legislature that no one needs to carry a gun to go buy a cheeseburger, and so they outlawed the open carry of unloaded weapons in the state of California.
Now, weren't we still red at that point? Wasn't California still red?
In 2012, I don't know, I think it's a toss. I don't know how red California's been in the last 50 years.
Yeah, that's well, we used to be.
But red or blue,
doesn't matter.
Anyone who pretends to be king.
Yep.
Over you, except the God that created you,
yeah,
and strips you of a liberty which was given to you by God before the government was created. And remember, this was not a land filled with government waiting for people to show up so that they could decide, and they could decide and make a list of the liberties that you are to seek permission to exercise. Yeah. This was a land filled with people who created government to protect their liberties, and in California, it's written, we the people of the state of California, grateful to Almighty God for our freedom, that to secure and perpetuate its blessings, we do establish this Constitution. Mm-hmm. The people of the state of California, grateful to Almighty God for their freedom, their liberty, yeah, established a Constitution to protect that liberty. And so it is proven law that people came before government, people have unalienable rights, Article 1, Section 1 of the California Constitution, the Declaration of Independence specifically states that in the preamble, and that now California pretends that you must seek permission of King Newsom and his minions in Parliament, the legislature of California, and you may be allowed to exercise your liberty, and you may not be allowed. And California has stated in their filings that they have given all authority to sheriffs and police chiefs to decide who may carry a weapon on the streets and cities of California.
So if you're able to carry it in one county, you may not be able to carry it in another county. We already see that.
No, that's absolutely true. And whenever you're reduced to begging the government for that which belongs to you, then the sky is the limit as to what they tell you need to beg for.
Right.
You know, in our county, we have to beg for the water that our cattle drink so that when you go to the grocery store to buy a steak, it'll be there for you.
Yeah.
And the government says no all the time. So we have to beg to use the property that we worked for and was given us by God and is our unalienable right to, according to California Constitution, Article 1, Section 1, to pursue, possess, and protect our property. Wow. We have the unalienable right to those things, and yet we're reduced to begging the government for permission to use that property. I don't know, everybody. What do you people think about that?
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, when you use the word right, it's a right. And these rights are God-given rights. These are God-given inalienable rights. We have these rights codified in the California Constitution, as Mark just said, the United States Constitution. How in the hell can you use the word allow and right in the same sentence?
Most people don't even know where the word rights came from. They don't even know what a right is. Is a right a permission? Where did a right come from? What is a right? What constitutes a right? What is the root of that? In other words, can you even trace that back so that you know when someone says, oh, you have the right to do that, you have the right to scream at the driver next to you, you just don't have the right to do anything about it when he cuts you off. I mean, where did that word come from? And it came really from the Bible itself. And in Leviticus, it says, proclaim liberty throughout the land and to all the inhabitants thereof. In fact, we have a bell in Philadelphia. It's called the Liberty Bell, and it has that inscription on it. This nation was formed by Christian men and women on biblical principles. All of objective law, all of objective moral law, all of our legal standards come from Christian morals and principles, and so do the legal standards of this state. And so the word right comes from God himself, because if God is the sovereign creator of all the universe, it is right for him to tell his creation what they ought do and what they ought not do, and what the reward is for doing that which he wants, and what the reward is for doing that which he considers wrong.
Yeah.
It is right for God to do that because God is the sovereign. Now, you are the sovereign of your house as the leader of your family. It is right for the people in your family to do the things that you deem to be legal, moral, and ethical, and it is wrong for them to do otherwise. You created the government, you the people. We the people created government. It is a right for the government to behave in the way we direct them to behave through our Constitution and through the documents that we produced in order to form that government. That is the contract that creates the right, or should they do otherwise, the wrong. That's where the word right come from. It came from John Locke and William Blackstone, the very earliest commentators on the laws of the United States and the laws of man in general. And we have the absolute freedom to do anything except that which has been ceded to legitimate government in order to protect the liberty we hold most dear. When government violates that contract, they are wrong, and we have the right to do those things which are pre-governmental, ordained by God, and the most important of those things are life, liberty, property, together with the means to defend those the best we can. And that comes right from John Locke, who the founders read very widely and upon whom the Declaration of Independence is largely based.
You know, the Second Amendment is our right, and California is infringing on that, and that's what Baird versus Vonta is all about. Yeah. So you want to get into that a little bit?
Yes. The Second Amendment is our right, and California is not infringing upon it. They have banned it.
Mm.
You have no Second Amendment right in the state of California.
Amen
you
to
have,
that.
You have none whatsoever. I can't stress that enough. And if you doubt that, call the show and let's talk about it. If you stand for what the state stands for, I'd like to hear your logic. But quite frankly, California has banned the exercise of the Second Amendment through 25850 and 26350. What we hope to do is restore that right without fighting. I mean, there are two ways to restore a right. You can do it through civil government and you can do it through court, or you can fight for it. We can tell the state we will not submit, and we can get out those weapons that we've possessed all along and still possess, most of us, even though they say we can't, and fight for it. Well, court is the way to do those things peacefully, and so that's the venue we've chosen today. Now, other venues are open to us, but those aren't required yet. So in court, we've chosen to attack the state of California's position in banning the Second Amendment. Now, people out there will say, well, we have concealed carry. And the state even says that in your filings, in their filing. In their opposition to our motion to have these laws stricken, they have said, well, we allow you to concealed carry. Why do you need the right to open carry? In my deposition, they asked me, why do you need the right? Why do you need to openly carry a weapon? And my answer was, because it is my right to do so. And the state's attorney general said, why do you need to openly carry when you can concealed carry? And I said, because my permission to concealed carry, which I must beg from the government, could be revoked at any time. In fact, I told him, after this deposition, you might be so mad, you might call the sheriff, and because he works for you, Article 5, Section 1 of the California Constitution, you might tell him to revoke my permission to concealed carry. In fact, one of our plaintiffs or one of our defendants has had his permission to concealed carry revoked. Now, he has some other means of doing it, LPOSA or something like that, but that's irrelevant to the discussion because a permission can be granted, it can be revoked, it can be modified. Well, you can carry, but not here and here, not Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, not between the hours right. of 8 and 5, not when you cross a certain bridge, even though that's the only bridge you can take to get to the rest of the state.
Right. Right.
You can't carry around a grocery store, you can't carry within 1,000 feet of a school, and so on and so forth. But if you have the right, then none of those things apply because you can do what you think is just and moral.
Right.
And if you are a lawful citizen who is not otherwise prohibited, in other words, you're not a felon in possession or whatever the case may be, that we have not attacked those provisions. So in other words, if you're a law-abiding citizen and you're not otherwise prohibited from possessing a weapon, you have the absolute God-given pre-governmental right to openly carry a loaded weapon anywhere in the state of California that is not a crime to do so. And that's
so,
what the
so
suit
then
is.
How
We have 2 minutes. We've got Siskiyou Steve on the line. Okay. Steve, what you got? What's your question?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment real quick that
okay.
I've never felt so vulnerable. Yesterday I broke down on my motorcycle. It had a clog in the fuel line and crapped out on me. And I'm standing there in the middle of nowhere with the key to my bike and a water bottle. That's all I have. And for the first time in ever, because there's so many crazies, you know, I felt like, where is my pistol? I need my pistol. And then I started thinking further, you know, I don't need permission. I'm a veteran. I'm a combat veteran. I don't need to go take a test to show you how I can shoot or take a test on how to be safe with a weapon. I'm a veteran. And many veterans have had, you know, combat duty. So I think there should be something in there about veterans also.
Well,
besides the fact that it's our constitutional right, Mark is 100% correct, and we all need to be down there at that courthouse, and that's all I have to say. Thank you very much for your show, Terry. And
sure.
Wynn.
Mark, you had a comment? Go ahead. You got it.
Yeah, I was just going to say you are a law-abiding citizen of this nation, and as such, you are entitled to every right
yep.
afforded to you in the enumerated rights, the Bill of Rights, which, by the way, Bruin v. New York Rifle and Pistol Association commands that. And you also have the right under the California Constitution to defend yourself through whatever means you may avail yourself of. And that means that you may carry any bearable weapon, and that's anything that can be used in the event of confrontation against another person, anytime you need to defend yourself. That is not a right given you by government. That is a God-given human right that applies to every free and independent human being in this nation.
All righty. Well, with that, we're going to go off to a break. If you have a question or a comment for Mark Baird, the phone number is 530-605-4567, 605-4567. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
They're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They're all together ooky, the Addams Family. Their house is a museum. When people come to see them, they really are a scream.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com. Join Sue McClain weekday mornings from 6 to 7 for the Sue McClain News Hour, where you'll hear the up-to-the-minute local news, national and international news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Followed by Free Fire Radio from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bach. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, equal opportunity critics. From noon to 3, learn how to get out of debt with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday nights, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal, local history, North State Now, and unsung heroes of our area. From 7 to 9, tune in to Ben Shapiro, your local downtown radio station, KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
I have it on film. No, I don't.
We're on film. I just noticed the camera's on.
Oh, shit.
So you're live on YouTube right now, Mark.
Oh, goody.
That was great. That's really good. That's another side of you that we never want to see again.
Yes.
Don't ask Mark to dance.
I have a dance that's suited for radio.
Kind of like our faces here.
Well, we have a very important court case coming up on the Second Amendment. On November the 4th at 9 a.m. at the Robert Matsui Courthouse in Sacramento. The address is 501 I Street, and we encourage people to come there, get there in the morning, support Mark, go into the courtroom, stand outside, bring flags, signs. We need to have our Second Amendment right. Again, it's a right. And Mark, give us a short synopsis on the case itself.
Okay, first, back to the courthouse. When you come, you bring your flags and your signs. You will not be allowed in the courtroom with flags or signs. So appoint someone that can hold on to all that stuff. Remember, when you go in the courtroom, we're in front of a federal judge who is really a piece of work. I'm going to limit my comments to that. And so be professional, be quiet, be polite, but be there. Because public opinion can influence a judge.
Mm-hmm.
If they think people care about this case, they're more likely to do the right thing. If they think they're doing it in the darkness, they're more liable to strip you of your liberty when they think nobody's watching. So please come. And if you can't come, please support us with a little bit of money. I mean, we are very close to being out of money here. This hearing will probably drain the coffers, so please send whatever you can. If you value the right to defend yourself, if you value that at all, you know, help us out with $5, $10, $100, whatever you have, and send that to PECAN, P-E-C-A-N. Put 2A on the memo line of the check, because PECAN handles a lot of different causes. And send it to 14441.
No. 14421.
14421. Old Oregon Trail, Suite B, Redding, California. What's the zip one?
96003.
Okay. And anyway, please help with that. And if you wonder what the address is, write it in the chat room. Somebody write it in the chat room so that everybody has that. Okay. The case as it stands on the 4th will be a hearing over our motion for a preliminary injunction to bar the state from enforcing 25850 and 26350. And at that point, you will have the ability to openly carry a loaded or unloaded weapon. Now, unloaded sounds kind of silly, right? But for years, we had the right to openly carry an unloaded weapon. But think about it this way. If you get out of your car and you don't have your magazine in your gun, even though you might be able to carry it loaded, you're committing a crime until you put the magazine in it. So we want you to have the most latitude and the most liberty. And that's what this hearing is about, our preliminary injunction, which is a motion to ban the enforcement of these penal codes until the trial has run its course, and we fully expect to win the trial itself. But what we want to be able to do is exercise our right while that trial is going on, because, quite frankly, we've been in court 4 years already, 4 years. Just to get to this point. And judges steal your liberty all the time by delay, 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 delay. Charles Nichols has been in court on his case, his open carry case, for going on 13 years.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Now, where's he from?
He's from Southern California.
Okay.
And his challenge is essentially the same, but his case has been kicked back to the federal court. He's actually not as far along as we are now. Wow. After only 3 or 4 years in court. But the summation of what we hope to achieve is this. The preliminary injunction has a 3-prong test that you must overcome in order to have your motion succeed. First of all, you have to be likely to succeed on the merits. And the merits of our case are open carry falls within the plain text of the Second Amendment. In Bruin v. New York Rifle and Pistol Association, which, by the way, was a watershed, a monumental case for liberty, Justice Thomas says that if an individual's conduct complies with the plain text of amendment, then that conduct is presumptively constitutional, and that plain text is defined as when the founders wrote it. In other words, it was defined by how they understood it and what they understood it to mean. Well, remember, we had just finished fighting a war with our own government. It wasn't a revolution.
Right.
It wasn't called a revolution until decades and decades later. It was a civil war. Prior to the Declaration of Independence, the British government, our own government, had been attacking its own citizens for 2 years. And we defended ourselves with our own weapons publicly carried in the open without any risk of government intervention, because we are fighting our own government.
And no second thought about doing it.
No, absolutely not. If you wanted to live and you wanted your family to live, there was no second thought.
Right.
So open carry falls within the plain text of the Second Amendment. That's very important, because those cases are open and shut. Plaintiffs have no burden to provide historical evidence. I and my cohort, Richard, have no burden to provide any historical evidence to support our claim. Under Bruin v. New York Rifle and Pistol, the entire burden to prove that there were widely held regulations that date back to 1791 preventing the open carry of loaded weapons falls entirely and squarely on the government.
On the state of California.
Yes. We are not bound to prove our position. They are bound to prove their position whenever an enumerated right is involved.
And how are they doing so far?
They have not shown, nor have they alleged, that there were any regulations whatsoever in the last 4 years that will show that there was a prohibition of any kind on the open carry of a loaded weapon, either in the United States in general or in California. And also, the Supreme Court has narrowly defined that time frame because they said in Bruin, all history is not created equal. In other words, it is the history at the founding era, 1791, that counts. Mm-hmm. No other time can suffice because past the founding of the 14th Amendment, that history is too late. In the 19th century, governments were more interested in disarming people than they were in keeping them safe. There were all kind of lying and cheating going on. For example, in 1917, you got concealed carry in California because the sheriff in Los Angeles County said, we have to restrict concealed carry because Pancho Villa's men will sneak across the Mexican border with guns in their pants in order to murder citizens in their bed in Los Angeles. Do you believe that? I mean, that's actually the transparent lie that that dude told in the California legislature, took that up. Oh, man, they were all over that. So in order to prevent Mexican Americans from being armed, they took away your right to concealed carry. And in order to prevent urban blacks from being armed, they took away your right to open carry. So the motivation of removing your Second Amendment right has been racial right down the pipe.
Right. That sounds racial all the way.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to this. So plaintiffs have no burden to provide historical evidence. That burden falls squarely on the government. Defendant concedes. The state concedes, and history reveals that the manner of carry limited by the government at or near the founding era has always been concealed carry. Hmm. There have never been any bans on open carry. Now, defendant says, A.G. Bonta says, well, yeah, but, you know, you can't ban all forms of carry. And since we allow concealed carry, mm-hmm. we can ban open carry. That's not quite what it says. That's not quite what the history reveals. The only regulations appropriate to this case are those that have restricted concealed carry. And in fact, Peruta v. San Diego, they call it Peruta 2, which is standing law. It was never reversed by the Supreme Court. It's still the law. It says that concealed carry is not a right. It is a permission that belongs to states to do with as they wish. They can ban it. They can regulate it. They can charge money. They can do whatever they want. It is not a right. And the Peruta court concluded by saying, if there is a right, it is open carry. If there is a right, mm-hmm. it's open carry. Mm-hmm. Well, the Bruin court said there is a right, and it's in plain English. It's the Second Amendment. And if my conduct complies with that right, is presumptively constitutional. And since in the Ninth Circuit, the only right is open carry, that must be my right. Okay, let's go on now. Defendant failed to provide any historical tradition of limiting, criminalizing, or licensing the open carry of weapons and firearms. Now, let's get into the weeds here just for a second, because this is so funny. It's hard for me to believe that these guys actually wrote this down. In the Miller assault weapons ban case in San Diego, in the Duncan case, and in my case, they're saying that there were laws that were restricting the carry of weapons, the open carry of weapons, in the antebellum period. And so, therefore, that is a longstanding historical fact and should be used and applied in this case that you can ban open carry. But do you know what those laws were? Those were the Democrats in Jim Crow. The only limits on open carry were to freedmen, were to blacks, who were former slaves.
Right.
They didn't limit white people's ability to openly carry. They only limited blacks' ability to openly carry, and none of those prohibitions withstood a state Supreme Court or federal court challenge.
And
none
yet,
of them.
And yet they're going racial again.
Well, no, they're using that as well. There is history and tradition to ban open carry because we kept blacks from openly carrying after they were freed. They're using that. They're actually using that. And
well, no racism there.
Well, no, but they don't care because what they're saying is, oh, no, no, we did it. We did it. And even though it was wrong, it applies. But none of those challenges survived any court challenge yet, either Supreme Court, state Supreme Court, or federal court challenge. So there were no open carry bans that survived court challenge, either pre-bellum or in the antebellum period. And in fact, in California, there was absolutely no restriction whatsoever on openly carrying a loaded weapon anywhere you wanted to go in the state, including walking into the governor's office, until 1968. And that is just a tad bit away from 1791. And so that history does not apply. All right, let's go on. California's licensing scheme, because this is another thing that the state is alleging. Well, and that's what it is, scam, I call it. Scheme is kind of a long word for me. I like scam better. But California's licensing scheme is irrelevant to the right to open carry. So the state is alleging, well, since we allow you concealed carry on a May issue basis, by the way, because even though the Supreme Court commented on May issue, 26, 150, and 155 still say May issue, nothing's changed. They tried to pass SB 918, which made the May issue regime a horrible nightmare, which involved tons of training and all this other stuff, and that didn't pass. So the penal code has not been revised since the New York Rifle and Pistol v. Bruin case. And even AG Bonta, he sent out a little letter to all the sheriffs and police chiefs. I happened to get a copy of that. It was kind of interesting. And what it says is you may not, it has been ruled unconstitutional for any permitting scheme to insist that people show just cause to carry. However, you can demand, as a police chief or a sheriff, that they pass a moral aptitude test. In other words, are you trustworthy enough to carry a weapon? Now, you're a law-abiding citizen. You've never committed a crime, or you never committed a serious crime. You're not a lawbreaker. You're a rule follower. But you have to prove to a single state agent or a single state actor with no right of appeal that you are trustworthy enough to carry a weapon.
What a load of crap.
Well, it's the same as May issue for a show cause.
Yeah.
Only now it's a moral turpitude interview.
Who's the judge of that?
And Bonta says that a sheriff could require a psychological evaluation from a psychiatrist as part of that trustworthiness test that you're now going to be required to pass.
So that falls back on the sheriff per county to administer
It never got away from him. And yes, it's up to the sheriff or the police chief, because a lot of police chiefs have delegated their authority to do these things to sheriffs. So in a lot of cities, the sheriff department does all the CCW stuff. Well, they're still saying, and also May issue is still in force in California. They may issue a permit, and conversely, they may not. And you will never find out why, and you will never have recourse because there is no right to appeal. So concealed carry, you know, I've heard the argument a million times, well, it's tactically superior. I don't know. Maybe that's true. Maybe it isn't. I don't really care because it's not my right. And so the state continues to talk about the licensing scheme and how you may be allowed to carry, so you don't need the right to carry. And what we're telling them is we did not mention the licensing scheme in our complaint. We don't care what the licensing scheme is. We don't want to know what it is. It doesn't allow anybody anything that the right doesn't give them the God-given authority to do, and we don't even want to discuss the licensing scheme. You're in the wrong courtroom. If you want to argue about the license, go to another courtroom, because we're here to talk about open carry, which is our right.
Right.
Now, in order to win a preliminary injunction, you have to be likely to succeed on the merits, which we obviously are. Mm-hmm. And even Judge Mueller, in previous hearings, said we were very likely.
She's your judge in this case.
She's our judge. Okay. And she said we were very likely to succeed on the merits of a Second Amendment challenge. Mm-hmm. So even she's admitted that.
As long as if she adjudicates it that way and lets it happen. I mean, she's in control of the courtroom.
Well, that's,
so
that.
So what is she saying? Is she showing her hand? Or
What are you saying, Wynn? Have we run into this before?
We spent a boatload of money to run in.
Exactly. What are you saying here?
Same judge and everything. Yeah.
So you must also prove that irreparable harm to the plaintiff is presumed. Well, we have several Supreme Court cases and several federal court cases, including one that California federal courts prosecuted against Donald Trump, that say whenever lawful individuals, law-abiding citizens, have been denied a constitutionally guaranteed right, that in and of itself is irreparable harm for which there can be no reparation. That's how strong that language is. There can be no reparation for denial of a constitutional right. So that is irreparable harm in and of itself, and we have a bunch of court citations for that. And then you have to, the balance of public interest must favor us. We are the plaintiffs in this case. And it certainly does, because whenever there is irreparable harm, to the public. The public's interest is to stop that harm. Mm-hmm. So it's a recognized principle in federal court that in cases where the government is the culprit, that the balance of interest tipped in the public also goes along with the public's interest to repair that harm. Mm-hmm. And those two actually become one thing. And so irreparable harm because of denial of a constitutional guarantee is obviously that the interest in repairing that tips to the public, not mm-hmm. the government.
Gotcha.
Because the government, only people can have rights. Government can't have rights. It's an inanimate object.
Right.
The only thing governments are capable of doing is A, either submitting to the right of the people, or B, committing wrongs against those rights. Those are the only two course of actions for government. Shut up and sit down.
And we've had the latter way too long.
We've had the latter way too long from the kings and queens mm-hmm. of California.
Yeah.
So public interest favors, and now what we have to say, how is the public's interest going to favor our case? And that is that the public's interest is in restoring the status quo to before the Mulford Act.
Ah.
And the Mulford Act is an unlawful, unconstitutional mm-hmm. act with racist motivation and racial undertones of the highest order. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. the public interest, obviously, is in equality to all the citizens of California and the reinstitution of the constitutional guarantee of self-defense and defense of your family and your home. And that favors the striking of those two penal codes so that the Second Amendment will be restored in the state of California fully and completely to what it was understood by the founders to be at the time of the founding in 1791 and was practiced unregulated, unrestricted, and to tell you the truth, it was totally unremarkable all the way up until the 1968 prohibition of open carry.
Holy smokes. So we're talking 170 years there that this has all been happening, and
170 years of statehood and
right.
another 100 years pre-governmental
right.
and probably more than that if anybody was around to even see it. I mean,
wow.
even people who were roaming California pre-Spanish rule, native peoples, was there anyone saying, oh, you know, I know that there are a lot of bears and stuff around, but you better leave the spear at home.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, those things.
And you can only have one spear.
You can only have one spear. Oh, and that one's
and one arrow.
And that one's a little sharp. We need the end to be a little more roundy
yeah.
so that you don't accidentally poke whoever it is you might run into.
You don't discharge it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then finally, the balancing of equities tips sharply in the plaintiff's favor for reasons that I said before, because denial of an enumerated right is irreparable harm, and the public's interest is always in restoration of enumerated rights. And finally, the defendant's public safety arguments, because here again, Bruin v. New York Rifle and Pistol expressly prohibited the government from interest balancing. In fact, Justice Thomas said, the Second Amendment itself is the interest balancing of the people to guarantee their right to do something which the government may not want. And so the interest balance is the people are guaranteed the right, and government must stay out of that. And it is not up to any branch of government, Justice Thomas says, and it's confirmed by Gorsuch and Barrett and Alito. No branch of government, not even the third branch, has the power or the ability to interfere in the exercise of an enumerated right, because if they did, it would be no right at all.
There you go.
It, in fact, if they did, it might turn into a permission.
Privilege.
Which some people with money might gain by bribing a sheriff or making a big political contribution to his or her campaign.
Yeah.
And other people, the bulk of the people, wouldn't be able to gain that permission because they don't have enough money.
Wow.
And that's what happens in California. That's what's happened in New York. That's what's happened in all the no-issue states, where if you got big money or you're famous, yeah, you get a permit. But if you're not famous, if you're just one of the poor so-and-sos that has to walk home at 2 in the morning or take the subway at 2 in the morning, you know, you may not make it alive because you don't have the ability to defend yourself
or
you don't have the tools.
Or if you contribute to a campaign.
Right.
Like they're finding
exactly.
that they're having problems with now.
And so in their filing, the government has specifically stated that it's in California's, ready for this word, interest to reduce gun violence.
Really?
Even though it may strip us of our enumerated right.
Unbelievable.
Well, that's the exact argument that Bruin prohibits expressly the Ninth Circuit and the state of California, the Second Circuit and the state of New York from making. They, wow. They target these two circuits. They target the Ninth Circuit and the state of California. You cannot use that argument. And yet the state uses it anyway. And they go through 3, 4, 5 variations of the argument. But when they settle it, and they settle it. So you see that the state of California has a vested interest in reducing violence in the state, and the only way we can do that is by denial of enumerated rights and allowing some people permission to do these things, and some people maybe not to do have permission to do these things. We're going to, in an intellectual, and this is something else that we actually wrote in this motion, if the court is intellectually honest, they will find for us, the plaintiffs, immediately, because the evidence is clear. The law is clear. The case law is clear. The history is clear. Now, another thing Judge Mueller has instructed the state's attorney, because quite frankly, she's a better lawyer for California than California lawyer is.
She always has been.
Yeah. She says, yeah, well, no, you know, no. Don't you guys basically, and I'm paraphrasing, and I'm gilding the lily here a little bit, so forgive me. But don't you guys need years and years to examine the history and hire lots of professors and lots of expert witnesses to dig into the weeds to see if you can find one lousy root in one of those weeds that leads you to be able to say that open carry has been banned since 1791? Don't you guys need all that time? And the state's kind of going, I don't think he was paying attention at first, because then he goes, Oh, yes, we do, Your Honor. Yeah, of course we do. Of course we do.
He already knows it's a losing battle. Yeah. So,
well, that argument was used in the Miller assault weapons ban case, and Judge Benitez rejected it out of hand. Hmm. And that argument, that very argument, was used in the Duncan v. Bonta case, the 30-round magazine case in San Diego. And the judge rejected that argument out of hand because Justice Thomas rejected the argument out of hand. He said Second Amendment history and litigation is not so complex and does not require so much time and effort that hundreds and thousands of historians and professors have to get involved. It is based on court precedents, case law, and the plain text of the amendment, and any judge and any lawyer can see their way through that quickly. In fact, the Bruin Court, quoting Heller and quoting McDonald and quoting Wren and quoting plethora, Cruikshank versus United States, Miller versus United States, blah, 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 ad infinitum, and I could go on for an hour, has already delved sufficiently into those issues to show what has been historically prohibited or regulated since the founding era and what has not. And here's the plain outcome of that. Concealed carry, depending upon how you look at it, may or may not have been regulated. And I say even concealed carry really wasn't regulated. Now, the Supreme Court did not quite have the huevos to step on the permitting scheme.
But for those of you, Olinda, that is
stones.
Balls.
Stones.
to step on the permitting schemes. So they found no fault with permits as long as they don't require just cause. And essentially, their hidden language is they have to be shall issue. They can't require just cause. But they did not find fault with the permit itself, even though in the founding era, there were criminal penalties for concealed carry, but there was never a license. It, never in the history of this nation until the 20th century or the late 19th century were licenses to do anything regarding firearms ever required. You could carry one in your coat, in your pocket, out in the open, wherever you
anywhere
wanted to.
Yep.
Now, there were criminal penalties for concealed carry for people who weren't traveling or didn't have some extraordinary need to have the gun in their pocket. For example, if a woman goes to a formal ball and she can't wear a holster outside of her dress, you know, it was commonly acknowledged that she could stick her little derringer in her hand-warming muff or in her purse. But other than that, there were criminal penalties for surety violations, but there were no licenses that were ever required for the carriage of a handgun.
That's amazing. So now, do you think the judge is going to rule the way she should, or do you think she doesn't want to have that on her record?
When I pray every day that what I think would prevail in the world, but unfortunately it doesn't matter what I think, it only matters what she does, and I cannot
foresee the future.
Well, folks, we want to let you know that Mark is going to be on here with Sovereign Minds. So the minute we go off, he's still here. If you have a question, if you have a question for him, it's 530-605-4567. 530-605-4567. He will get into more of this. I believe this case is probably the most important case we've had in California in 100 years. And it's very, very important that you share this program and the program coming up behind this, Sovereign Minds, so we can get the word out. Time has come.
For 51.
And please give if you can.
Amen.
Get it done.